I don't think we've met before, but I'm the referee on this field.
If you're working as an accountant and you lose your job, nobody really notices.
Leinster could offer me $5 million a year, I wouldn't go.
It is Tommy Lowe!
Rugby, rugby weekly.
Little reverse pass. And
hello and welcome to the 42 Rugby Weekly Extra. Good morning or good afternoon, the 42 members. Hope you are keeping well. Murray Kinsella joins me on the line from Fukuoka. Is that right, Murray? How do I pronounce it?
Yeah, Fukuoka, I think, is pretty Fukuoka. Good. As good as you're going to get.
Yeah, well, then I've made a balls of it. how are you this morning, this evening, your time?
Yeah, all good. Really settling in here nicely. It's a lovely city. We just had a press conference there again. So kind of ticking along through the week. It's obviously a longer build-up this time. It feels a bit weird. You feel like you almost should have a game already at this point. But I think Ireland are enjoying their extended chance to recover and then build up like they would in a normal match week as well. So all the sounds from them are pretty good at the moment.
Nice one. We'll kick off with the question on everybody's mind. And we touched upon it yesterday, but we knew it was going to change throughout the week. Richard Joyce asks it first in the WhatsApp group. Typhoon Hagibis, a Category 5 storm due to hit Japan Friday to Saturday. According to Twitter, residents asked to make arrangements to evacuate certain areas. Is the Samoan game in jeopardy?
Yeah, so the latest weather forecast is that the storm, the typhoon rather, is going to steer clear of where we are in Fukuoka, the island of Kyushu. And Tokyo and Yokohama and the north of Japan look to be certainly in a far kind of far more dangerous position, I guess. And the matches there potentially come into question now. World Rugby haven't given an update today officially yet as we speak now, but it's certainly the information is that Ireland's game on Saturday with Samoa looks like it could be okay and will go ahead. And certainly Ireland are planning for that at the moment. These forecasts, especially for a typhoon, something as volatile and as changeable as that, it is difficult this far out. And I think the feeling all along has been to wait until 48 hours before, rather, and then you can kind of get a bit more accurate with your prediction of the weather. But all signs at the moment suggest that the fears of Ireland's game being moved, which was probably the most realistic option, it was never really going to be cancelled. As we said, it would have been a farcical situation, but those fears of Ireland's game being moved are fading away. And now it's probably the other games, funnily enough, or ironically enough, maybe with Scotland playing, that are in more danger.
Yeah, we'll have to see how it plays out during the week. I'm sure it will change again as the days progress, although hopefully not for the worst. Andy Farrell is producing content at an alarming rate over there. He was comparing his perception of the correct and safest tackling technique to skiing, I believe.
Yeah, this was a really interesting one yesterday. Obviously, the tackle is a huge kind of talking point around this whole World Cup. We knew it was going to be. We knew that World Rugby would do their best to clamp down severely on dangerous tackles, high tackles, shoulder charges. Maybe that has been inconsistent in this tournament, but we've already had 5 red cards. That's more than any other tournament in the past, 4 each in 95 and 99. And 3 of those 5 red cards have been for dangerous high tackles. John Quill, obviously from USA, the Uruguay prop Facundo Gadas, and then Argentina lock Thomas Lavanini. So they've been obviously straight red cards. There should have been 2 more from that Samoa-Russia game. There was later 3 game bans for Ray Lilo and Matu Matu. Pierce Francis got cited for 1. Reese Hodge got cited for 1 and banned. Pierce Francis obviously got away with it, in my opinion. I thought that was just as bad as some of the other ones. And there's even been a couple of sin binnings, penalties, missed penalties. So it's really been on the agenda. And it came up yesterday in the press conference. I'm not sure if people have read this. I would imagine some of them have. I thought about not writing it because it's obviously difficult to portray a technical thing without any imagery. We know that from doing our analysis bits. You kind of need an image to highlight exactly what you're talking about. So I think I've actually got quite a few messages from people wondering, is there a video? Can we see it? A couple of coaches and referees asked, is there a video of the press conference? Unfortunately, there's not. But I felt it was still worth running with because it was an interesting and quite a passionate opinion. He got, I wouldn't say worked up, but he kind of went on at length about it and gave a lot more information and opinion than you normally would get in those press conferences. Obviously, he's got skin in the game because Owen Farrell's been on the receiving end of 2 of those red cards. direct shots to his kind of head. So obviously it's interest in him as a coach, a defence coach, and also with his own family as well. What were you going to say there, Gav?
Well, just the fact that obviously statistically the tackler is more at risk even than the person on the receiving end of the tackle, generally speaking. And Farrell himself, Owen Farrell, has dished out his fair share of dodgy hits over the last year as well.
Yeah, he certainly has. He certainly has. And some of those were some of the clips that World Rugby looked at, and when they were pushing this focus, were based around Owen Farrell, and he should have been carded for a couple of them, and shoulder charges, not just the high tackles. But anyway, Farrell's opinion on this is that technique is everything. I completely agree with him on this. His sense is that the positioning, the head positioning of the tackler is really important, and they've got to get their head through the tackle. Now, that does sound a little bit weird, and again, without his actions, it's hard to explain, but he's talking about getting their head to the other side of the tackle so that they're square on with their shoulder. So their head gets beyond the midriff of the ball carrier, and they get a square connection with their shoulder into a place that's safe for both them and the ball carrier. Obviously, you can still apply a lot of force in that tackle and make a big hit, but your head is not going to get caught in the middle. Whereas if you've got guys coming into tackles, dipping their head, they obviously can't get a sighting of where the ball carrier is moving at the last split second. So that could end up with them getting an elbow into the head, say, or getting their head smacking off the ball carrier's knee. Andy Farrell actually spoke about the Chris Farrell one in the Japan game, where he got his head turned to the side and an elbow kind of made contact with him. He got concussed from that. You also have the other bit of it where the tackler is coming in and possibly losing that sight at the last second if they turn their head to the side or put their head down, where they're not really making an accurate assessment of where their shoulder is going at that last split second. So potentially that's where you're getting those high tackles when they're not fully aware of what the ball carrier is doing. And I think probably the Lavanini one is an example. If people go back and have a look at that, his head turns off to the side. And like, we're talking split seconds here, but you know, some people said, oh, Owen Farrell kind of dipped there at the end. Lavanini can't really see that because his head's off to the side. Whereas if he's got his head through at the front of the tackle, he's got a better sighting of Owen Farrell and then can get his shoulder into a safer place. So there's kind of two elements to it that way. He did liken it to skiing, saying, you know, when you're trying to teach a kid how to ski, the hardest thing for them is to understand you got to lean forward because that's where you're going to get your control out in front. It's hard for you to actually kind of commit to that. He thinks that it takes a bit of courage to have your head leading through in the tackle. I have to say, when I was younger, I do remember my coaches really emphasizing that, keeping that head up, keeping that sight line as well, and never getting your head turned on sideways, because that's where it's going to get caught. And we've seen a couple of those in this World Cup. Dan Biggar probably springs to mind, where the head gets caught on the other side of the tackle. It's a difficult one maybe to fully illustrate. I think it would be cool if you could follow up with it. Maybe I think you could do it in a 1 minute clip on the training ground, maybe even with one of the players, and that would be a massive value to people, because obviously coaches and underage coaches and coaches at all levels are really concerned with this issue. For me, and it's something we've mentioned before, like line speed at the top level of the game, that's the biggest change in the last 10 years. I don't think the technique has improved enough to really make sure that that's a safe factor in our game. You're getting a lot of line speed without the technique on the end of it. Guys are hairing up, obviously, and then they're getting into that split second where they have to make a decision and readjust, but they're probably not in a safe position. So technically, it's brilliant to hear a coach coming out and being quite passionate about sharing his opinion on it. And certainly from an Irish player's point of view, you'd be pretty happy that your coach is concerned about it that way, for the good of the game and for your own health and safety.
Yeah, it's a great point about the IRFU. Like, you could imagine that video doing serious numbers on social media, even just from people who would be curious or have a horse in the race, so to speak. And interesting as well that you brought up your experience of having played the game as a kid. I was thinking the exact same thing when I was reading your piece about what Farrell was saying. We would have been taught that probably aged, I don't know, 10, 11, and even at the start of secondary school, there was an emphasis on tackle technique and getting your head through the tackle in the interest of safety. I wonder, with the advent of this increased line speed over the last couple of years, if tackling technique has not only not improved, but actually that the focus on it has nearly gone out the window to some extent, that it is more about a kind of a collective defensive line and going up and smashing the opposition in any way possible, as opposed to individual sort of sessions which would lend themselves towards safer tackling.
Yeah, and I think the thing is, like, the people who are involved in this World Cup are in defensive positions that you and I have never ever been in, essentially, because we never probably played in a team that defended that aggressively, and like, these players when they were younger probably weren't doing that either. I don't know if any under 12s teams play with a blitz. Hopefully they don't. Hopefully they just enjoy themselves and have a bit of offloading, have a bit of fun. But I think, yeah, there's an onus there for the technical to come with that aggression in defense. Again, I think I did mention before that example at Munster when Jacques Nienaber came in and got the wings operating with real aggressive line speed, getting them up from the edge of the defense. And there was, I think the number was 8 concussions in the space of a few months at the very start of his kind of era in charge of the defense. That was a technical issue because the wingers were now in a position where they hadn't really been in. Yeah, they were operating with line speed, but not quite to that extent. And they were herring forward and getting themselves into bad positions. So you've got to get that technical element to it. And that's like top level rugby and sport is all about performance. And there is both a health and safety factor there, but also a performance element. Because often you see guys coming up at line speed and they don't have the tackle on the end of it. Yeah, often it is about funneling them back into a different place. But if you're able to bring really good technique on the end of that, you're obviously going to be more effective defensive team. Plus, you're not going to get players missing matches potentially because their technique is off. So there's a whole range of reasons why this is a good thing. And as I said, really good to see Farrell, he wasn't even too heavily prompted, just go for it and express his opinion.
For sure. It's going to be really intriguing to see how that develops over the next couple of years. A question actually on that topic from Thomas Moroni about his namesake, Thomas Lavanini. Thomas asks, with Lavanini having one of the highest numbers of cards in the game, but only having his ban reduced by one game less than is the norm, should there be changes in the way ban lengths are decided upon? Instead of admitting guilt and apologising being something that gets an instant reduction to the ban, should the lack of them lead to an increased ban?
Yeah, I think this is something that we are all frustrated with, and it's something that constantly surprises people, particularly supporters and media, really. I think we probably don't have an understanding of the other judicial side of it. Most of us don't really get that, and we don't probably appreciate the weight you have to give towards things like that. I know it's not, obviously not a court of law, but it's a disciplinary procedure with lawyers involved and fighting each case in a very clever way. I know the English, England actually brought their own kind of legal representative over to the tournament, and he's probably got a bit of praise for his role in helping Piers Francis get away, essentially what I felt was getting away with it. But yeah, I would have probably frustrations over that. Lavanini has shown to me a consistent, it's a dirty edge, isn't it? He's always looking for that little bit of niggle. He's always looking to leave a mark on opponents, and sometimes he does that in a really legal way, an impressive way, but often, as his disciplinary record shows, it's not in a legal way. And I think that should be more heavily weighted to dissuade players who've shown that they're more than capable of foul play, dissuade them with a stronger ban. Just the length of some of the bans is really confusing as well. Like the two Italian props getting 3 weeks for, like, they could have broken Dwayne Vermeulen's neck. It was such a horrific one. And they get 3 weeks, the same as other guys who maybe slipped up in tackles or whatever. I just think there's a kind of discrepancy there, and it's hard to understand the weighting of it at times. So yeah, I'd understand that frustration.
Yeah, all of which brings us seamlessly on to Samoa. Now, they're actually fairly decimated going into this game with Tim Nanai-Williams failing a HIA last weekend. And then they'd already lost big number 8, Afa Omosa. And as you mentioned, Ray Leilo and Motu Matu were suspended for essentially trying to decapitate Faz Artemiev. I wouldn't know this for sure, but I suspect losing 4 key players like that is a fairly seismic blow to a team whose squad depth probably isn't quite as significant as some of the other bigger nations.
Absolutely, yeah. It's a big blow for them. Tim Nanai-Williams failed that HIA. They haven't completely ruled him out. but it is a blow to lose, especially Ray Lilo. He was, apart from that pretty bad tackle, he was excellent in the first couple of games and a real impactful player. People who've obviously watched him for the Cardiff Blues, and he always makes some sort of impact on a game. It was a nasty one in this case with the Russia game. That'll dent them. It feels like they've got a bit of a point to prove in this game. They were really frustrated with some of the refereeing of the Japan game, and obviously they were, in Steve Jackson's words, bewildered by some of the decisions, particularly that one around Nana Williams and a kind of late hit on him that left him needing the HIA. Obviously there was this scrum incident at the end where Japan got the decision and were able to go and score a bonus point. And I think Samoa's sense of it is that it's kind of them against the rest of the world and nothing has gone in their way. So they'll be out to make a bit of a dent. I don't know. It's easy in this circumstance to kind of fear what could come from Samoa. And I know a lot of fans are worried about that and thinking players should be wrapped in cotton wool. But like, it's worth remembering that Ireland are justifiably strong favourites for this. Like, this is a game they should absolutely be putting away, with considering they've had that long turnaround, considering they've so much on the line in this match. I think they're 26-point favourites. So strong favourites for this game. And as you mentioned, Samoa are depleted. Look, they'll definitely talk a good game this week, and they've already been talking it up about, you know, going out and doing what Japan did to Ireland, about getting him Bundiaki's face. Obviously, he's got his Samoan family. His parents are Samoan. So it'll be a big game for him, a big occasion for him. And I think they'll be highly motivated to end with a bang. But Ireland certainly looked to be in much better condition, and really, they should be putting them away.
Yeah, Josh Tyrrell talking about getting in Bundy's face. He played against him in school back in the day. I think, to be fair though, Murray, fans' fears about this game may not be so much about the result or even the nature of Ireland's prospective victory, but more so how much of a toll will be taken, how much that victory may come at a physical cost, just purely because they do hit hard. It's not all they bring to the table. Like we saw in their warm-up game against Australia, they're well able to go wide and play expansive rugby, so you'd want to pigeonhole them. But again, like those two hits on Artemiev, and even just traditionally, you think of Brian Leem or the chiropractor, they've never been afraid to put in a hit. And at such a crucial juncture in Ireland's World Cup campaign, and with the likelihood that they're going to field a first team, you just hope that we don't sort of have a similar end to the pool as we did 4 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, all you can do in that regard is hope that the match officials are on point and that Samoa are going to play with a positive intent. I would imagine that's their ambition as well, is to make a good impression and leave a good impact. I find it hard to imagine them going out and going, let's take the effing heads off these Irish lads as we go down with a bang. I think they'll want to play positively and make an impression both individually and as a collective, kind of as they exit the tournament. Nick Berry's the man in charge, who actually has been pretty good from what I've seen in this tournament. Like, no referee is perfect, no player is perfect, but he is a kind of rising star, I think, and is probably in the mix for the knockout games as well. So he's in the middle. I think it's Poit and, what is it, Brendan Pickerel, the New Zealand guy on the assistant referee duties, and Rowan Kitt is the TMO. So yeah, they hopefully won't have to call on Rowan Kitt too often. But I guess you're just putting it in the referee's hands that we have a fair and safe game. Ireland got to go and play their strongest team and come away with the win they need.
Yeah, teams yet to be named, obviously. But a question here from Ian in the WhatsApp group. He was wondering, what is your prediction of the Ireland-Samoa score compared to what the bookies are saying? And the handicap is indeed 26.
Yeah, I haven't even thought about this yet, to be honest, what the scoreline is going to be. You'll wait until you see the teams. I do think Ireland are going to win strongly, as they have tended to do when they've played Samoa. I can see their best performance of the competition coming. I know there's a lot of doubt around them, but I just think with the extra time they've had and the fact that they have Robbie Henshaw back now, for example. I know Jordy Murphy's the only one who was not training, or didn't train today, rather. All other 30 players trained. Joey Carberry was up for media duties, so you would presume he's okay to get back in there as well, having had the kind of withdrawal with his ankle last time around. Score prediction, oh God, it's early in the week and I hate doing score predictions anyway. But I think just at this stage of the week, I do think Ireland will finish the group stages on something of a high. And I'm not sure that Samoa, as you mentioned, with those missing players and probably a bit of fatigue, I'm not sure if they'll be able to deliver that as well.
Yep, that sounds good to me. Two questions here from Will, one of which you've already alluded to. He was asking, with Henshaw on the way back into the squad, do you think he will have a big impact for this weekend and for the quarterfinal? And then looking at those quarterfinals, where does Murray think we will win or lose? Early doors again there, obviously, in that we don't know who we're playing.
Yeah. In terms of Henshaw, yeah, I think it's certainly a boost to have a guy who is so important to Ireland back in the frame. At this stage, it kind of looks like himself and Aki will partner up in midfield. You would have thought maybe a big ask to come straight back in and start, but he does seem to be training well by all accounts and does feel he's fully fit, that he's over that hamstring, and they potentially even could have pushed him to play on Thursday, but it made more sense to them to get him in here. And with their planning for a quarter final, it would be a boost to get through, even if it's 60 minutes, and put himself in that frame. Ringrose has obviously played a lot of minutes. He said he'd be happy to go again, so you could use Henshaw off the bench. But either way, a guy who looked in such good form against Wales in that final warm-up game, and who has proven so often in the past, like, it's beyond question really, that he's a quality player for Ireland. He's a defensive leader, makes good decisions. He's physically able to mix it up, as well as having a decent bit of footwork and probably an underutilised kind of distribution game as well. So yeah, it's great to have him back. Quarterfinal wise, I mean, if you're looking at the box, the thing Ireland will feel probably that they have over them is kind of rugby smarts and decision-making, maybe class and composure. For me, Andre Pollard is physically, he's right up there as the best 10 in the world. I think he's an excellent defender. He's not really someone you can target in that sense. He kicks well, and when he's on form, place kicks well. But I think he struggles maybe with his passing game. I think technically it's not a very good pass for that level of the game. And then his decision-making and maybe some of his tactical IQ maybe isn't quite there, where someone like Johnny Sexton's certainly is, and Conor Murray certainly is. That's not to talk down the box. They have so much physical strength. They have a genius like Gio Apollon, who's also defensively excellent as well. But I think that might be, for Ireland's point of view, the place where they get one over on the box. Obviously, there's a lot of IQ on Irish rugby in that setup, but I think Joe will feel some way he can almost make that work against them and lure them into things that they think they're going to see and show them a different picture. If it's the All Blacks, depending on how things work out, that is a very tough fixture. But again, I think Ireland will reflect on how they've been able to limit the All Blacks' ability to show that broken play, a turnover transition attack that they're so lethal on. And that's so often the difference. It was Owen that mentioned yesterday in the podcast about Ireland. When they're at their best, the error rate is so low. And if you look back on even November last year, when Ireland beat the All Blacks in Dublin, it was based on limiting those opportunities and not making the errors that, say, in the South Africa game, two aerial losses lead to two of the tries. The Kiwis will score in the blink of an eye. So again, from Ireland's point of view, that's where they'll feel their strength is. I guess from my own point of view, I just feel like the Kiwis are in such good shape, and with such an effective 10-15 combination now between those two playmakers, they have a little bit of, they have an ability to go beyond just relying on their transition and to be really clever in biding their time, soaking up some of your defensive pressure as they did against the box, and then using their attacking kicking game or using their double passing kind of playmakers to get around you or get through you. They also can mix it up physically as well. So that'll be an incredibly difficult game. But I think from Ireland's point of view, even with their lack of form, they'll still feel they have the tools to do a job.
Yeah, we'll see. And I suppose I was taking it for granted that we will be in a quarterfinal. We can get that for our first and just box that off. Yeah. One last one here from Greg Haw. You're like a Nostradamus in this group today, or that's what they want you to be. He was wondering your predictions for how the semi-finals will line out and the final based off tournament showing so far, given quarterfinalists from all pools except for Ireland's pool are pretty much decided already.
Yeah, so it's a tough one. And I would say don't rely on my predictions, because I've never, ever made money from... from sport.
Have you got a wall chart there?
Yeah. I have to kind of lay out of it here in front of me. So the first quarter final is winner pool C versus runner up pool D. So for me, that'd be England versus Australia, with England going through. The second is Saturday 19th October is winner pool B versus runner up pool A. So you've got New Zealand against, depending on how this weekend goes, I still have a kind of feeling that Scotland are going to win their last two games and Japan are just going to run out of steam. I go for Ireland.
So do I.
Yeah. Yeah, I do. And I would actually hate to see that because I'd love to see Japan through. So I'd say Scotland in that sense as the runner up and, against New Zealand, you'd expect New Zealand to go through there. So they're into the semi-finals. Winner pool D, you have the Welsh playing against the runner-up in pool C, which would be France. I think they've got enough done enough there to get into the quarterfinals. It is interesting that there's talk of turmoil in their camp again. It feels like 2011 all over again. Apparently Gruada was falling out. The captain has fallen out with the coaches, but the players are siding with Gruada. So there's always a bit of drama there. And then the last quarter final is obviously winner pool A versus runner up pool B. So that's Ireland against South Africa. Oh, it's hard to call. If I'm being sensible, I think South Africa go through there as well. So that gives us our semi-finals of, let me get this right now, pool C winner England against the All Blacks, isn't it? Yeah, against the All Blacks, England against the All Blacks. I'll say the All Blacks go through there. And then the other semi-final is South Africa versus Wales. Isn't that what I said? Yeah, South Africa versus Wales.
Yeah.
That's a tough one to call. I'll go South Africa. God, that's a boring final. Not a boring final to watch as a rugby fan, but it's the one everyone would have probably predicted at the very start of it. So it's going to be fun to see how it works out.
Yeah, we've made plenty of predictions in the lead up to this World Cup and during it, which haven't quite come to fruition from Ireland's perspective. So we'll have to see how that one goes. But thank you to all of the members in the WhatsApp group for their questions this morning. And thank you as well, Murray, for taking the time. We'll catch you again tomorrow at some stage.
Thanks, Mel. Look forward to it.
Okay, chat then. That's it for us for today. We'll be back again tomorrow, I do believe. In the meantime, have a good Tuesday and take it easy.
I don't think we've met before, but I'm the referee on this field.
If you're working as an accountant and you lose your job, nobody really notices.
Leinster could offer me $5 million a year, I wouldn't go.
Robbie Weekly.
Little reverse pass.
Magic!
You're not alive until you start kicking when the room is spinning and the words aren't sticking.